It is 8:03, good morning, Monday edition, October 25, 2021. Pleased to have you with us. The one and only John Bird, thank goodness, is here with us. See what I did there, John? You're the one and only, and we thank goodness for that. For good reasons, John, we love you. You're a unique character, unique unto yourself.
Nobody like me.
There's nobody like you. Once again, thank goodness. Jason Lee's over in the newsroom, and he's gathering headlines. There's Valerie Vining.
Good
I heard the voice
everyone.
Of Valerie Vining. Slim Rob over in the traffic center. I've seen Slim, but I've seen him running around here.
So
but,
it must be busy this morning.
Have not heard from him. Well, if he doesn't come in the studio, then that's a good thing. Right? 545-9950. Not that we don't want to see him.
No.
We just normally that means bad traffic. All right, I want to talk Ron DeSantis and conservatism because I'm a little bit confused based on my understanding of what DeSantis wants to pass regarding vaccinations in Florida, how that's a conservative bill. Because it not only takes away the ability of the government to make businesses do certain things, it's also taking away a business's decision-making process with regard to vaccinations. And I'm a little bit concerned about that.
Yes, because you would think you would want businesses to have that
flexibility.
That flexibility. And based on what we're seeing is happening right now around the country, I think there's some businesses that are going, I wish I had that flexibility.
But with the flexibility means that certain times businesses are going to make decisions that, and I'm not talking about vaccination mandates. Well, we'll get into it and we'll tell you the nature of the bill, as I understand it, coming up in just a few. Alec Baldwin. Before we get to Rush and Jackie and others on the phone, let's talk about Alec Baldwin. If you have not heard, Alec Baldwin was involved in a shooting in which someone died.
Someone died and someone was injured.
It was on the set of a film in which he was executive producer. He was also starring in the film.
Called Rush, I believe, is the name of the...
I think it's Rust.
Rust.
With a T.
Rust, not
I believe,
Rush.
I believe it was with a T. Yeah.
Rust.
And it was a gun accident involving a gun being used as a prop on a movie set in which a live round was accidentally, we believe, placed in a gun being used by Alec Baldwin. And he shot a cinematographer and a director on the film. The director was shot because the bullet went through the cinematographer and into the director. Mm. Now, some have asked, why in the hell was he pointing it at the cinematographer? He's pointing it at the camera or near the camera. It was a camera shot in which they were getting a direct shot on Alec Baldwin.
Of him holding the gun.
As if the camera was the person he was pointing the gun at.
Gotcha.
Right? I mean, it was from that person's point of view, so that it's naturally from the camera's point of view, and behind that camera is going to be a director and a cinematographer, and he shot the gun thinking that it was a blank, and it was not a blank. And I understand why a lot of people want to go after Alec Baldwin, because Alec Baldwin's not a particularly pleasant person. Mm. Alec Baldwin takes advantage of circumstances in individual lives and goes after people as a result of those circumstances unfairly. But I am not Alec Baldwin. And I am not those people. When I tell you that if the circumstances are what we have heard they are, and that was that he was rehearsing drawing the gun toward the camera, they were not filming. It was during a warm-up session, a rehearsal session, and in the process of doing that, he shot the gun. The gun had a live round, and it killed a person.
And apparently the word spoken, cold weapon or cold gun, in other words, there's not live ammunition in there, is reported to have been said as he was handed that gun.
I happened to have been on, I was the director of a theatrical production, a play, in which we used a real gun. You use a real gun in movies for realism. So I take exception with, I think a lot of people are talking about movie sets and talking about theatrical productions in a way that they don't really understand how they work. And I just want to bust through some of that. And I heard a little bit of it on Red Eye Radio, and I'm not going after those guys, but I just want to bust through some of that based on my experience, right? So it's not a prop gun if it's a real gun. It's a gun used as a prop. There's a difference, okay? You have a lot of different props on movie sets in theatrical productions. And if you have weapons that can harm other people, you typically have, in theatrical productions, one person designated to be responsible for those
props,
for those items. Mm-hmm. And that is called the armorer, which is a difficult word to say. And on movie sets, the armorer is ultimately responsible for making sure that that is a cold gun or a cold weapon. Now, you know, you don't really have a cold knife because a knife is a knife. Mm-hmm. You don't really have a cold axe because an axe is an axe. You call it a cold gun when that gun has been checked and that gun is being handed to you in the immediate aftermath of being checked to ensure that it does not have a bullet in it or a live round in it. Mm-hmm. This gun was called a cold gun. The assistant director took it off a tray where it was had been placed by the armorer and gave it to Alec Baldwin and said, cold gun. And it was not. It had a bullet in it. Now, some want to know why you would ever have a bullet in a gun, and there are a couple of occasions why you would on set, and primarily it's for particular shots with revolvers would necessitate, especially in old Westerns, if you're looking down the barrel of a gun, you will see the revolver on that gun, and you will see whether that gun has bullets in it in some models. And in those types of shots, you would want to have
real bullets in
there. But I would think that those types of shots, Valerie, are so controlled.
Yes.
I mean, so controlled. Because you have live rounds in the weapon.
Right. And you ask, you know, there's a lot of questions in this shooting and what happened. Did the person that was handling the weapons for these scenes really know what they were doing?
That's a good
with
question.
Weapons? Were how versed were they with them? How comfortable were they with the guns? Did they know a lot about them or very little? I don't. But the issue with this whole thing is the different people that handled whatever they were handling. And again, everybody is saying that Alec Baldwin is at fault here, and they're blaming him for the death of this cinematographer and the injury of the other person. And I think you have to, there's a lot that you have to look at before you start pointing fingers as to maybe who is responsible.
Well, and I can understand why someone would say, well, he's the guy that pulled the trigger. Sure.
Yeah, I get that. But did he load the weapon? Did
no,
he put the bullets in the gun? Not
to our knowledge. And I will just tell you my experience is that you trust the people that you're working around and you trust that they are doing their job. Hmm. And if you're doing this every day, day in and day out. I mean, when you're working on a movie Western, for example, you're handling guns day in and day out, and you have to trust that the armorer is doing their job. You can't possibly break down every gun that you get. I'm just telling you how it works in the real world, and one will say, well, you know, you ought to. Well, maybe so, but you expect that the person that you're working with has done their job. All that to say, I know that Alec Baldwin is not a likable human being, but I cannot imagine being responsible for the accidental shooting of somebody else.
This kind of reminds me, and I wonder if going forward this will be the way that they do things. It reminds me of when somebody packs their own chute for when they're going to jump out of an airplane.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pack my, if I know how to do it, and I know how to properly do it, and I've jumped, I've had a lot of jumps, I'm packing my own chute. Because I want to make sure that that chute opens up and I don't end up dying when I jump out of an airplane. And I just wonder if maybe you're to a point where if I am going to have this gun in my hand and I potentially could fire this weapon and shoot and kill somebody, well, by goodness, I'm going to be the one that either loads it with the bullets or the blanks. And it's just this is just a weird dynamic because, again, you're handed a weapon and you're saying it's a cold gun. You have to trust that the person that loaded it with bullets that aren't going to do anyone any harm.
Unfortunately, you're dealing in a lot of cases with actors and actresses. Mm-hmm. that
not people that are professional
don't know a lot about guns.
That's right. And that's what it feels like this is. People that didn't know a lot about weapons and knew a lot about acting.
Well, but the armorer, does. I mean, was supposed to. This woman had expressed some trepidation about being named armorer of this shoot, but she was apparently the daughter of a famous armorer, gun person, in Hollywood who had been doing this for years and years and years, grew up with it. So those people are, we are to understand, specifically trained in the handling of guns and ought to know better. Someone's responsible. I mean, this is not, I mean, I don't think you walk away from this saying, this was just an accident.
No, somebody will be held responsible. I mean, if you're the family of this cinematographer that's dead and the other person injured, someone holds responsibility. You can't just say, well, it's not Alec. It's not the armorer. It's, you know, it has to be someone. Someone is held responsible.
Well, and add to this the fact that, and here's where Alec Baldwin may be held responsible. If you're executive producer of a project, you're the ultimate decision maker about broad things on the project. You're not checking guns or whatnot. But what you are doing is making determinations about shooting schedules and such. And they had a walkout, right? There was a disagreement. I don't know who's right and who's wrong. I know actors and I know Hollywood types are pampered children. And so sometimes union members become so pampered, they whine about just about anything. So I'm not making a judgment call. All I know is there was a disagreement about they were supposed to have hotel rooms or not, and they were supposed to get paid this amount, and they weren't. And some members within the union were frustrated enough, they left. And Alec Baldwin did make the decision as executive producer to continue shooting, even though they left. In that respect, if there were people fail-safes that weren't checked off because you didn't have enough people.
A movie and tell the actors and tell all of the people that are on the set, hey, this is the deal. You're going to have to drive 50 minutes to the nearest hotel because this is a remote location. It's a Western. We can't have buildings around. We can't have hotels around. So we move it out here, and that's got to be understandable. So that was part of their argument. We don't want to drive 50 miles. Some of them left.
I related that I was in a show, and it was a black box production of The Dumbwaiter by Harold Pinter. I was the director. My best friend in college, Caleb Boyd, was one of the actors, and another gentleman, an older gentleman, who was a Vietnam War veteran. And in The Dumbwaiter, there are two assassins waiting for their orders as to who they're supposed to kill. And without going into too much of the plot, at the end of the play, one of them is told that he's supposed to kill the other one. And the play, the climax of the play is him drawing down on that person, and then the play, and he's standing there holding the gun, and the play ends. And you don't know
whether he's shot or what he's not shot.
Well, you don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's intentionally left open-ended. A lot of other things going on in it. So in order to achieve the realism that we wanted to achieve in the show, we made the decision to use...
real ammo?
Well, no, not real ammo. A real gun. Now, we could have used a prop gun, and they wanted us to use a prop gun.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they thought we did, honestly. But I didn't like it because, fake guns look fake.
Yeah. And if you're looking for, again, during a play.
Where people are right up close. Mm-hmm. And the moment dictated that I felt strongly as a director that it was necessary because the moment dictated, I can't have anything taking away from that moment, the seriousness of that moment.
Mm-hmm. And if
one friend is being asked to kill another friend as a byproduct of his job. And he knows that if he doesn't, that he'll be killed, right?
Right.
So, I mean, that is high drama, high tension. And the last thing I want is somebody on the front row realizing, well, that's
a plastic gun.
That's a plastic gun.
Right.
But I'll tell you this, Valerie. It was very, very difficult. And it was very serious. And we took it seriously even in college doing it this way. And add to that the component that I was dealing with someone who was 20-something years older than me and had been in Vietnam.
Uh-oh.
And so there's a lot of conversation from the beginning. You realize you're going to have to point a gun at someone. Didn't like that. So you're dealing with all of that too. So you go through a process by which the last thing that happens is that the director and the stage manager and the actor, this is what we did every night that we performed this show. The last thing we did before Robert put that gun on his person, and he was the only one to have it, was you check every aspect of that gun. Three people are standing there to make sure that it's all clean. That's in a college production in Carrollton, Georgia.
Yeah.
So you can't imagine the fail safes that ought to be going on a Hollywood movie set.
Yeah. So again, where did they go wrong with this? How did this happen?
That's a good question. Jackie and Rush. Rush wanted to compliment me, and we took that whole segment talking about Alec Mald, but I'm sorry. It says Matt's my new hero.
Well, you got to go to Rush.
Well, we'll have to wait. 19 after the hour. Hey, by the way, Lonnie's Furniture Company in Warrior, Alabama is your one-stop shop for all things Lazy Boy. Now, you heard me. Lonnie, I don't know how John Lonnie's has more Lazy Boys than actual Lazy Boy, but apparently he does. I mean, I'm talking in the hundreds. In the hundreds. Now, some don't have inventory. John Lonnie's does not have that issue. And he has the best furniture around. Living room, dining room, bedroom, and yes, Lazy Boy recliners. Right there at Lonnie's Furniture Company in Warrior. Beautiful. Beautiful Warrior, Alabama, and worth the drive for you. Go see John and his team, L-A-U-N-I-U-S, LonniusFurnitureCompany.com. All right, as promised, to your phones, or to our phones, I guess I should say we go. Your telephone calls on Talk 99.5, Birmingham's Real Talk, Talk99.5.com, Matt Murphy, Valerie Vining, and Rush is next. Hello, Rush. Good morning. Thank you for your patience, sir.
You there, Rush?
Maybe I spoke too soon. Well, John was busy cleaning these phone calls and making sure that the people were still there during the timeout, so I can't imagine. Hello, Rush. All right, I'll put you on hold there, Rush. Jackie is next. Hey, Jackie, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I just want to say I love y'all.
Well, thank you, Jackie.
I listen to y'all all the time, and I totally love y'all.
Well, we love you too.
Thank you, Jackie.
Oh, bless you. I want to give a shout-out to Wallace that called in earlier from Blount County, because I'm calling from Blount County as well. I'm from Nectar. And I hate the incident that happened to Alec Baldwin. He wants to be a badass, you know. But the thing is nobody wants to have that on their shoulders.
Yeah, I can't imagine the act of accidentally. I mean, you know, having to kill someone in self-defense or in the line of duty like police officers often have to do, I can't imagine that, much less killing someone accidentally. Thank you, Jackie, for the call. It's Talk 99.5, talk99.5.com. Hang in there. It is Talk 99.5, Matt Murphy, Valerie Vonnegut, 832. My apologies to those of you on the phones. We had a power issue overnight, I'm told, which has led to some janky phones, but we've reset those, and that means availability to you right now. Birmingham Broker phone lines up at available 545-9950, 545-9950. Hopefully Rush calls us back. He wanted to praise me.
Yes.
And you know me.
On a call with Wallace.
Who am I to deny him that opportunity to praise me?
So give us a moment, Rush, and we'll get things going again, and hopefully he can call back in.
I believe that's the case.
Yes.
Let's talk a little Anthony Fauci.
I think that's kind of where the conversation was going
when
Wallace called, yes.
So, Anthony Fauci sat in front of several different committees in Washington, D.C., most notably in front of a Senate committee in which Senator Rand Paul, who is also a doctor, admonished him for gain-of-function research and funding gain-of-function research. Just as a primer to those of you in Aniana who haven't picked up on it yet, gain-of-function research. That is where a laboratory will take a virus that exists in animals and intentionally attempt to distort it, pervert it, whatever, in an effort to get it to jump to human beings.
Right.
And if they can create that jump, they don't do it in humans. They do it in animals, sometimes dogs. More on that later. If they can get it to jump, then the idea is that gives them the ability to then ascertain exactly how that happens and how to combat it before it happens. Now, on paper, this seems perfectly reasonable. But it was the danger of losing control of that gain-of-function research and allowing a virus that is now jumping to human beings out in the wild that caused Barack Obama, as president of the United States, to ban gain-of-function research in America.
Right.
And immediately the National Institute of Health began to fund gain-of-function research elsewhere, including the Wuhan lab.
China. Imagine that.
All of this is easily documentable. Inexplicably, in the aftermath of the coronavirus release. Now, remember, we're Elephantine. Valerie and I, we remember, okay? Right after the China virus, as it was then called, became obvious, we were told, oh, this is bat meat.
Right.
And it was odd. I mean, looking back on it now, yeah. I mean, it even felt odd then, but looking back on it now.
Yeah, the wet markets, that's where it came from.
Oh, and they were so sure of that. Mm-hmm. And the media just vomited it all over.
And why did they jump right away? They jumped to the wet markets, mm-hmm. that it came from bats in a wet market.
Like, really? You're oh, like, yeah, that's what it was. Never mind. Nothing to see. That's what it was. Of course, that's what it was. That's what we were told. How long? And I remember this, too. I was thinking about this the other day. It was several months before we became aware that there was a virology center right there.
Yes.
Like right across the street.
Now here's the thing. There were those officials, there are people in the U.S., higher ups, that knew about it, and no one said a word about it.
They knew exactly.
And it didn't say a word.
And Valerie, I believe they knew exactly what happened.
They did.
And they floated this bat meat wet market nonsense as a head fake to keep us off the scent. And the scent was this, that just as we feared would happen in the United States of America, why in the hell you would turn this over to the red Chinese
and trust them
is beyond me. But you right. did, and you did it by funding it. You moved money through the National Institutes of Health to another organization, which then moved the money over to China without the fail-safes that are necessary to make sure that it doesn't explode into a worldwide pandemic like,
which it did.
It did.
And then, of course, over the weekend, the NIH has confirmed that it was taxpayer-funded gain-of-function research on the coronavirus.
Well, right. And I wanted to walk slowly because I wanted to walk slowly so Aniana gets it, right? Mm. So it was bat meat. We didn't even know there was a virology center. Nobody told us that there was one. We had to find that out on our own.
And why do you suppose that was?
And they never mentioned it in all of their pronouncements, in all of their public conversations, and everything that they told us publicly. They never mentioned that there was a virology center over there. They did not mention that they were doing very serious gain-of-function research, regardless of whether we were funding it or not. They didn't mention it. We had to find it out on our own. And when we did find it out and we began to question Fauci and others on it, they were like, you're crazy. Y'all are insane if you think this is ridiculous. And then Rand Paul.
Yeah.
Rand Paul directly confronts Fauci.
Yeah.
And Fauci denies it. Says no.
He said he didn't know what he was talking about. Yeah. He told Rand Paul, you don't know what you're talking about.
You don't know what you're talking
about. Rand Paul knew exactly what he was talking about.
Amen.
And he was asking those questions
Amen.
Purposefully to get Anthony Fauci to answer the questions.
So Anthony Fauci said, and folks, you can go back and look at it. It's so disgustingly insulting and holier than thou. This is a guy with a God complex. Anthony Fauci, the same guy who said mask, don't mask. He said, what are you talking about? A leak out of a lab? Give me a break. You people are ridiculous. All of this has come to be known to be true.
True.
Mm-hmm. And he said, you don't understand what gain-of-function research is. You don't understand what you're talking about.
Come to find out, Rand Paul does know what he's talking about.
And now after months. Oh, look, there's a telephone call. And now, after months of begging for the truth, we've begun to find out the truth.
Mm-hmm.
And the truth is this. Rand Paul was right. Anthony Fauci was wrong.
Anthony Fauci was a liar. Yes. Mm-hmm. He lied.
And we now know that.
So, and what do you do going forward with this information? I mean, we knew that about Anthony Fauci before. We're pretty sure that he lied. Now we have facts that he lied about the research and that it was taxpayer funded and that they were doing gain of function research in that Wuhan lab. And he lied through the whole thing.
He just lied. So what do you do with Anthony Fauci?
You fire him and then you prosecute him is what you do.
You would think.
That's what you would do.
You would think.
You would fire him today and then he should be prosecuted to the fullest.
For perjuring himself in front of Congress. He swore to tell the truth.
Is he responsible for the deaths that happened under his watch? All of these hundreds of thousands of people that died because of the coronavirus and that lab leak? Is he directly responsible for that?
It makes sense to me. And then add to that this. I understand that there are things that need to happen in the world that are unpleasant in order to help protect humanity. I understand that there are certain levels of experimentation that create dynamics that ultimately result in dramatic scientific movement forward. In other words, Valerie, if you told me that we had a real chance of, let's get over the top, okay? If you told me there's a real chance that we could cure cancer, but in order to cure cancer, we would need to make sure that certain drugs were safe on animals. Not just mice, but mammals, dogs. It would rip my guts out. But I get it. I get it. I get that there are certain things that we do that are unpleasant and horrible and awful, but we do them for the greater good. My God, this was not one of them.
No.
This was not one of them. And apparently they experimented on dogs in ways that I will not...
Don't even say it.
...talk about
right.
on this show. And Anthony Fauci knew about that too. He knew about that too.
Which was going on...
In China.
In China. Which, for them, for some reason...
Dogs
are a different class right. than they are here in the U.S., but that still doesn't, that's still, Anthony Fauci knew it.
And this sanctimonious, well, I called him something earlier, I got in trouble from yeah. Wallace, but this sanctimonious jerk knew about it. He has a God complex. He thinks he's more important than you. He certainly understands how expendable dogs are. Mm. And frankly, I think that he would think the same thing about humans. You know, what's a few humans amongst friends, if for the greater good of science?
And here's the thing. You have Anthony Fauci, who told us about wearing masks and is now telling us about the vaccine. And I'm not here to talk conspiracy theory. We know that the vaccine has helped to mitigate some of those symptoms you would get with COVID-19. I get all of that. But man, does it not make it extremely difficult to listen to anything that Anthony Fauci says? Now, but now with this information from the NIH and this information about the dogs, can you trust anything? Don't you know Rand Paul is finally saying to himself, thank you. I finally have the evidence I need to go after this guy.
I don't trust any organization that trusts Anthony Fauci. And so I, while I don't have a problem with the vaccination, and I believe in the companies that created it, and the last thing they want to do is kill people, his involvement in all of this is a problem.
It is a big
problem.
It
pushes people away from what they claim they want them to do. And if the Biden administration gave a damn about people getting vaccinated or COVID-19,
they would fire him.
They would, A, shut the southern border down, and B, fire Anthony Fauci, or maybe in the reverse order. Why in the world he still exists as an employed person with the NIH is beyond me.
And why there aren't protests today in Washington over his employment still in the position that he's in. There should be protests to get this guy out of there. I mean, there's nothing he can say that anyone's going to trust any further. Or at least conservatives aren't going to trust him. Are there some liberals out there that will? Probably so. He can do no wrong. But this, you can't trust him. You can't trust him going further.
845, your call's coming up. I think we got our phone issues handled. Birmingham Broker phone lines, 545-9950. The telephone number, 545-9950. I'll tell you this. I'll tell you, Buckets Away can handle any and all waterproofing needs that you might have. It's as simple as a telephone call to the gang at Buckets Away. Randy and Brandon, those are my two go-to guys. Brandon told me quite simply that he's been doing waterproofing and water encapsulation for a long time. There are the modern techniques in order to get that water away from your house and to protect your house from water and water damage, mold, mildew, and those health problems that are associated with them. And Brandon knows how to do that. And he said, I knew that I could do it for less money. And he's been doing that since 2017. Going strong. Buckets Away waterproofing. They're not the biggest. They just want to be the best. 222-6443. 222-6443. Call today for Buckets Away. It is Talk 99.5. Oh, yeah. You know, I love it when you sling the hits, John. That's good. You know I dig this. Jod Bird.
He's got the hits.
Stacks and stacks of waxing facts.
Flex guys.
Could you give me a little of the Casey Kasem going off the rails there, yeah. Matt Murphy? Let me have a little of that.
Come on.
It owns me.
These up tempo records, man. You know, I go from that up tempo record to the frickin'. It's 10 on the phone. Get 10 on the phone. Damn death dedications.
Death dedications.
All right, so it's 52 after. Hot Rod was first. Hello, Hot Rod.
Oh, no.
Oh, Matt, how are y'all today?
Hey, I'm Hot doing Rod, great, how Hot. Are you?
Doing okay. Yeah, I'm a dog lover, too, and I hate that he actually funded it, the puppy research, with our tax money. But talking about they're still doing some funding right now in Galveston, Texas, and in North Carolina on gain-of-function research, but it's not just on COVID, which has less than a 1% death rate. This is on SARS, which had a 15% death rate. So how about them turning that loose in America?
The SARS death rate, is that what you said?
Yeah, this according to Senator Rand Paul. If he's got that information, then it's somewhere in the public record that the news media is just blanking it out. But he came out with that in an interview that they're still doing gain-of-function research in Galveston, Texas, and in North Carolina, and it's on SARS.
Wait, they're not supposed to be doing gain-of-function research in the United States of America.
That's correct, but they said, oh, we're not doing gain-of-function. So they said, nothing to see here.
Right.
And they're still
much like the Fauci, you don't know what gain-of-function truly is kind of thing?
Right.
Well, and we need to eliminate that.
In front of Congress.
I mean, my God.
We need to eliminate quickly.
I mean, yeah, and my goodness gracious, Hot Rod, we now know. I mean, that which was called a conspiracy theory at the time, we now know is absolutely the truth.
Yeah, they're right on.
The mainstream media, these little sycophants that'll do anything that the Democrats tell them, they explained to us that anyone suggesting that we were funding gain-of-function research at Wuhan labs, that was a conspiracy theory. It's true.
It is absolutely true.
Yeah. It's Tom's turn. Hey, Tom, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I am great, Tom. I love getting worked up from your place in Wilsonville out to Royal Bedding in Pelham on your drive.
Well, you like to get my blood going, don't you?
I try to. Hey, hold on, Tom. I cannot give this call the attention that it deserves. in the time that we have left. We can tell you, however, about our friends at Absco Fireplace and Patio. Talk about sponsors and friends. Scott and Kathy are great people.
Super people, and they have beautiful things at both of their locations, from patio furniture to fire pits. Don't forget the big green egg. This is the time of the year that you want to grill it up with football games. And go by and see them at either of their location to get what you need for your backyard.
Oh, talk about a fire pit. Big green egg. That's what I'm talking about. It's Absco Fireplace and Patio. Two fine locations. 119, that's just off of State Park Road in Pelham, and then in lovely Inverness on Highway 280. We're back after this.